Start your day on a high note with the Morning Tailgate.
What does it mean to be a Raider? What are the qualities that we're going to stand for? We're looking for people that love football, that want to compete every day, or there just won't be a place for you here.
Oh my God! Proximus Prime!
The food is cooking, the drinks are on ice, so settle in with Vince Sapienza, Vinny Bonsignor, and Clay Baker on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Hour number three here on the Morning Tailgate. It's Raider Nation Radio, 920. Your flagship for the silver and black. Vince Sapienza, Vinny Bonsignor, Clay Baker. Coming to you live from Las Vegas on a Thursday, December 4th. Tim Murray of VSiN will be joining us here in about 25 minutes or so. We'll continue to take your calls, continue our conversation. One of which, there's one player on Sunday you're watching to either enjoy, to scout, to evaluate, just to focus on to see if they've got the goods. If they're part of the solution moving forward, who would that be this coming Sunday against the Denver Broncos at Allegiant Stadium? 702-365-9200. Union Raider says, I would like to see majority of our draft picks this draft play so we can actually get a grade on everybody. And even now, it's almost too late because there's only so much time left in the season. But you can't evaluate the younger players or the people that drafted them until they actually get some playing time. Union Raider, I agree with almost all of that. I do think a month left in the season, five games, is a very good sample size to get a read on your players.
I do too. It's
I think that's a good read, especially for the younger players, because as we've talked about time and time again, the rookie season for these players are unbelievably long. From the end of their college season to preparation for the draft to preparation for OTAs and training camp, into training camp, the rigors of a regular season, it is long for players who have never done that before.
Yeah,
at this level.
Right. I fully agree, and I'd like to see them get more playing time. But we also cannot dismiss, I know people want to roll their eyes, but they get after it at practice, and everything is filmed. There's a lot of evaluation from, you know, because we're not seeing it, and it's frustrating, I'm sure, and I fully admit that, but they're seeing it. John Spytek and his group and the scouts and the coaches, they are extremely diligent in terms of what they're looking at on look at, to the point where every day before practice, you talk to Pete and he's like, I don't know, I got to see it in practice today. Then I'll also go look at the, because he can't watch everything. They scour the video, so there is a lot of evaluation. I think what we're kind of saying here is for us to give a grade to this draft class. Within the building, I think they have a pretty good handle on where these players are currently and maybe what the potential is for them in the future. And obviously, you want to eventually see them on the field. And I know that there's guys in the personnel department that would like to see that. But as Vince pointed out, that's still on the coach to make those decisions right now.
Well, if in the draft the picks 2 through 8 are strictly just potential guys, then next year they have to be major contributors. Because if this is all just for potential this year, then next year it really better hit. And that just adds a little more pressure to the fire of what's going to be in next year's draft. So obviously there's going to be an incoming of a flux of new players mm-hmm. and some free agents that come in. But that means this draft has to hit next year as well. At least as far as, if not all starters, at least contributors on a lot of levels.
Yeah, you're not going to get all starters from your entire draft class.
No, I'm not saying that, but picks 2 through 8, they should be contributing.
Two through eight
from picks 2 through Tommy Mulott.
I don't.
So
I mean,
from
most
Jack
most general
Besh to JJ Pegues.
Most general managers contribute. Yeah, but you're saying start.
No, I said contribute.
Okay,
they have to be contributing.
Even that in year one. I mean, I talk to general managers every year after the draft, and they're like, "Hey, if we could get going into this season, 2 starters." Some depth pieces, a swing tackle, and some special teams contributors. That's what they consider a good draft.
Sure,
but
not many teams go and get a bunch of picks in the top 108 because they expect those guys to really pop. The Raiders did that, and very few of them are seeing the field.
Yeah. Again, that's not a decision necessarily that the – and that doesn't – that doesn't mean that they aren't going to pop. And I get what you're saying, but for this franchise, I would want potential more than I need a starter right now. You could have gotten starters right now in the draft that maybe don't have the ceiling that they believe that these guys have as well. There's that argument as well. For this team and this franchise, I want the guys that are going to be the highest ceiling possible players and work them into it when you can, develop them behind the scenes, and hope they hit that ceiling. So. Yep.
Hope is all we have right now.
Oh, well, yeah. That's the case for every draft class.
Up on the text line, Eric says, I hate the Genty pick. We could have had a back later in the round that could have actually blocked as well. See, now these are the conversations I'm open to having. If you simply just don't like a pick, fine. Let's have that discussion as to why. If you don't like the Genty pick, okay, who would you have taken and why?
And by the way, Genty blocks pretty well. I don't know what that meant right there.
Yeah. Gage says to Mark and Mesquite's call about Spytek, his picks are iffy at best. I'm not saying fire him, but I am critical. Jack Besh was supposed to be a pro ready, being a 5-year vet in college. Caleb Rogers, too. Jack Besh has not gotten better. Clearly, otherwise, he'd get playing time over Tyler Lockett. Don't fire Spytek, but very critical. So here's where I'll say on that. I'll go back to, you can't say Jack Besh isn't pro ready when he hasn't gotten the opportunity or the snaps.
And when he's been out there, he's played pretty well, by the way. He blocks well.
Jack can't throw the ball to himself.
Right.
Again, I'm not going to sit here and defend every single thing and say Spytek was perfect or Jack Besh is a perfect prospect. I'm simply saying we have not seen the opportunity afforded to him.
He was Jack playing Besh behind Jacoby Myers to start
Sundays.
Off the season, right? His position.
Yes. But even after Jacoby was gone, he went back-to-back games with 8 snaps on offense.
It's because the head coach wanted Tyler Lockett out there.
Right. So what I'm saying is
he's not
being afforded. Now,
right. You
can make the argument then he's not showing it enough in practice. That's fair enough. We don't know that, though, because we don't see practice.
So we don't know
how much of a separation there is between him there or not.
And I think in that case, obviously Jacoby was going to get the playing time. He was drafted to be the replacement for Jacoby Myers. That was writing on the wall day one because Jacoby's in the last year of his contract. And then when they move on from Jacoby Myers, obviously Pete and Chip and probably even a little bit of Geno Smith, God, if we could get another veteran wide receiver to replace, that's where Tyler Lockett comes into play. That was to help Geno. It was to help the operation and all that. Like, that's not indicative of Jack Besh or his future or his potential or what he could probably do right now for you. It was just they wanted more of a veteran player at that position. Jack Besh's time has started to come, and I believe his future is he's got a bright future. I still think they need to go get a number one caliber wide receiver. I don't know that Jack Besh will ever be that caliber of a wide
receiver.
That's
what I mean. It's fair. If you want to say the picks are iffy right now at best, that's fine. That's totally fine, but I do believe the understanding is the context. It's not like they're playing 100% of the snaps and you're not seeing growth. That's kind of my point
exactly.
To this.
I agree.
It's not like Darren Porter started from day one and now he's been demoted to playing 50% of the snaps.
Right.
That hasn't been the case. We saw one game, 17 snaps of Caleb Rogers. So a year from now, to what Clay was saying, if Caleb Rogers is starting at right guard, if Darren Porter's starting at the opposite corner and they're not playing at a level that is at least average or a trajectory of up, then absolutely the picks are iffy and you can question Spytek and be critical all you want. You can be critical right now.
Yeah.
That is totally fair as well. Let's just have a discussion as to why.
Right.
We can't say Jack Besh is not pro ready and be a starting slot receiver on a bad football team. We don't know that because he hasn't been afforded that opportunity.
And that's a coach's decision right there.
One more text before we get to the calls, and I know they're lining up. You know, we hear the same thing about our draft picks every year. Any team's fan base would be frustrated if their team is drafting a guy in the second round who's a special team guy. This does not mean we're expecting domination. Not sure what kind of obedience you guys are expecting from Raiders fans, but at this point I feel like we have the right to question things, maybe even a little prematurely. Again, I'm not saying you can't question things whatsoever. We're simply trying to explain why just because Jack Besh isn't a 1,000-yard receiver at this point of the season is because he has not been on the field
What did Pete say? Do we have that sound again? What he was talking about, the you give him a little bit and you hope, you know, if we
talking about the details of the game.
Yeah.
Learning the assignments, learning where to be, the intricacies of each position, which are obviously different for each single player. Again, I'm not expecting Raider Nation to sit there and say he's going to be number one wide receiver. He's going to be the best guard. Right. He's going to be a shutdown corner. I don't expect everyone to believe that, and we don't believe that either.
No, not Darian Porter, I think, has the opportunity to be a high end cornerback, or at the very least, a very serviceable cornerback. But there's also a reason why he was drafted in the third round, right?
Yes.
All right. So the whole league told you what they thought of Darian Porter coming into this draft. He's more of a, as Clay said, a potential guy. And I was fine with that for this team because I'm looking at this roster going, they need help everywhere. And they're not winning this year. So you get guys that are high potential guys. And if hopefully it works out. If not, you move on and draft somebody else and you blame the general manager and all that. And we'll all do that, of course. But I liked the high potential guys like that. Taking Charles Grant was not going to play this year. That was pretty much a given that he wasn't going to play this year. But they drafted him because he's this fantastic athlete coming from a smaller program that has all the intangibles. And then at some point, if you like a piece of clay, you work with him and get him to that point where he can be potentially a really good player.
And again, the frustration is shared. If you've been listening to us, we've been saying for weeks, why isn't Jack Besh on the field?
Mm-hmm.
Get him on the field. You have to know what you have in him, and the only way to do that is by playing. Now, the argument from Pete is that, well, yes, show it in practice.
We want to give him a little bit and bring him along. That's just how that's kind of how he's done it in those types of cases.
What I'm saying is the frustration is shared. We're all fiending to see more of what was a second round pick, a guy you believe to be a starting wide receiver moving for in the case of Jack Besh, especially a second round pick. That's what you expect, a starter. You're looking to get a starter out of this. So again, it's not that we're poo pooing the Raider Nation's frustration. It's shared. We're just trying to provide the context is all I'm trying to say. Let's get out to the phones. Patiently waiting, as always, Raider Mike in Boone. Welcome to the tailgate.
I'm not in Boone, Vincenzo.
Well, that's what I have on my piece of paper. Where are you, Raider Mike? Where
that
are
was
you?
Four counties ago. I'm in Nashville, bro.
Okay. I apologize. Anyway. You want me to wait? Should I redo it? Joining us now here on the Morning Tailgate, Raider Mike in Nashville.
Stop.
Good morning. Miss you, buddy.
I miss you guys. You're my paisans. And Clay coming up with Monkey Man.
Yeah. Well, we started out with the Goodfellas soundtrack.
I do a lot of Stone songs.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
Well, that's a good song.
That riff is wicked. That Richard, it's just wicked. And Billy Batts in Mesquite, I want Tommy to sign, you know, go get his shine box and make a visit to him. That dude is not, I have no clue where that came from. I have no clue the context, and neither do you guys. That call was ridiculous.
Well,
I really
kinds.
Call people out. You know that.
Clay, we love all our callers. Mike, as you know, we love all
we
our
do.
Listeners.
Yeah, everyone is welcome.
Everyone is welcome. Everyone can have
your
their own
Raider.
Takes. You just have to be ready to have the conversation. That's all.
That's all we're doing here. Anyway, I want five more Blue Mondays. Clay, I got a suggestion after your best of life show-off move.
Okay.
That knowledge you displayed on that was ridiculous, Clay.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
Top notch. No, Blue Monday by New Order.
Oh,
which is
yeah.
actually Blue Monday.
Good
and
call.
Then the remake by Orgy. So we got Fats, Orgy, a Fats Orgy. That sounds fun.
But right now it does, yeah.
And New Order. And then, of course, Bob and the Boomtown Rats. But anyway, well done. Anyway, guys, It's Besh for me, too. I mean, it's so weird. Everyone's saying the same answers. Besh needs to be on the field. Every time you show him, he shows. He doesn't drop balls. He blocks like a demon. He does what he's told. Why aren't we seeing more of this dude? Why aren't we setting up the next draft? So anyway, because Besh can play. That dude can play. And then, of course, Darian. Porter. I've been hearing this on national radio. That's an Al Davis pick, and he is. So why isn't he on the field all the time? I mean, get him better. It takes reps to get better, guys. You know what I'm saying? So anyway, we've got 4 Blue Monday songs, Clay, 5 weeks. Play those songs because we need Fernando or Dante. I want Dante. The windows Dante closes on the field are ridiculous.
Raider Mike, thanks. Give us a quick one.
Raiders! Things are looking up, maybe.
Oh, man. We haven't got one of those in a while. That felt good.
Yeah. You can tell that one was from Asheville.
That felt good.
Sorry about that. I thought it was Boone.
You know, I wasn't going to point fingers, Clay. We're not in the finger-pointing business.
I can't keep track of all his wheelings and dealings.
That's why I restarted the intro. Let's go out to Shields up in Connecticut. Morning, Shields. Shields, you there?
Yeah, you there?
Good morning. Hello? You're on. Welcome.
You there? Yeah. Okay. Sorry about that. A lot of back and forth today. I like the conversation. For me, I mean, like Vinny says, we have a lot of holes. Not to me a ton, but there is some holes. But the guys we drafted actually could fill that if they get some enough playing time to the end of the year and flash. I mean, we got Tonka Hemingway that could fill that middle. We need someone to dominate that middle. We got, you know, some good serviceable guys in there, but if he can get in there and fill it, we got Besh at the wide receiver position. Obviously, we're going to need a wide receiver.
Big time.
And we got Caleb Rogers at the guard position. That's a big hole in the offensive line. And like I said, those 4 guys, if they could fill those spots and come through, I mean, that's, to me, that would be a success. I mean, it's position, need, plus we have the young players drafted to hopefully to get in there and play their best, man. So I have no problem with Spytek. I don't know the dynamic between him and Pete, but hopefully they're going to come together, work together. They probably will. And it just got to play out, man. But we got guys drafted right now to fill these positions of need. They just got to play. Thanks for taking my call, guys. Keep it positive. Shields up.
Shields up. Appreciate the phone call. Thank you so much. Let's get out to Snake Man in the Carolinas. Morning, Snake.
Good morning, guys. Hey, I am in Boone. So Raider Mike's on one end of the state. I'm on the other. Whoa. Yeah.
Do I need to restart this intro, too? Snake Man, join us from Morning Tailgate from Boone.
We're expecting some snow here real soon, so it should be a fun weekend. Hey, you guys need to defend me, though, when somebody calls in after me and tells me, says I'm a troll, man. The last time I called in, a guy was like, I think that guy's a troll. Yeah. That's the furthest thing from the truth. But
yeah,
Snake Man, sticks and stones, Snake Man. We know you can handle it. Exactly. Sticks and stones. Exactly. You're good. We got you. We got you.
Give me some time here. I got to make a quick little. I'm going to go to Mark Davis real quick. I'm not going to criticize him too much. I'm going to come back around to Spytek. Vinny, you had just mentioned a little while ago about we can't keep hiring and firing. Firing is what you said. Coaches and, you know, GMs, et cetera. I agree 1,000%. I just want to give you Tom Telesco's record of drafting for the Chargers in his 10 years. Just these notable names. This doesn't include some free agents they might have lost over the years. Derwin James, Asante Samuel, Zion Johnson, one of my faves I talked to you about previously, Tuli Tuipulotu, mm-hmm. Austin Eckler, Keenan Allen, Darius Davis, Quentin Johnston, Trey Pipkins, Jamari Salyer, Diane Henley, Denzel Perryman, Rayshon Slater, and let's not forget, they bought in Khalil Mack in free agency. Oh, did I forget? Justin Herbert. So, my point is this. we're not, we don't need to be firing GMs all the time like Mark Davis has been doing. So what my point is, let's buy Tech Cook, let him have another year, maybe 2-3 years. But I'm just wondering why there has to be a coaching change every time there's a GM change. I felt like we should have kept Telesco on board and maybe just bought in Pete with Telesco. But again, that's water under the bridge. But back to your point about cannot keep firing GMs, that was going to be my point when I called in the last time about criticizing Mark Davis. But for some reason, I got disconnected. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, well,
okay, give him patience. That's a good example.
Yeah, and you know, I feel like I have a good idea of what happened in that situation. And in that situation, they weren't actually going to fire Tom Telesco, if you remember. They fired the coach first, and then there was a little bit of a delayed reaction until Tom got fired. He felt like he was safe. That was actually some of the reporting was that Tom Telesco was safe, and then a day later or however long it was later, you know, he got fired. And I think that has to do more with the Tom Brady influence. Go back and look at where John Spytek went to school, who he went to school with, who he played with at the University of Michigan. Who he was part of an organization with in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's Tom Brady. And so I think the general manager position was a call made by Tom Brady. And I would also say this. I don't know that Tom Telesco would have been okay working in that kind of a situation with a quote-unquote director of football operations or president of football operations working above him. So it was just one of those kind of awkward situations. Once Tom Brady got put involved, there was a lot of influence that he yielded and wielded, and I think Tom Telesco got caught in that, and Tom Brady brought in his guy in John Spytek, which is why I don't think that John Spytek's going anywhere, nor should he go anywhere. And I think for once, the Raiders, as an organization, need to let something come to fruition. Give it some time to come to some fruition. You can't keep making these massive changes in terms of the front office.
Am I still on?
Yeah. Go ahead.
You still hear me? Oh, cool. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you, Vinny. I didn't know if I was still on or not. But real quick, too. A lot of these teams, I don't care who they are. Many of the better teams, you know, they may also develop their players differently, but a lot of teams don't do it that way. You know, we plugged in DJ Glaze almost immediately. That's because I think we had an injury with Thayer Munford last year, but also plugged in Jackson Powers Johnson. So there's plenty of examples of other teams throughout the league that play their young guys immediately and get them reps.
Snake Man. I just counted it up. There's 10 first and second year players in the Raiders too deep on their offensive, and many of those guys are starters, by the way. 10 players in their too deep are first or second year players offensively, and 9 defensively. This is a very young team in a lot of ways. And so you can't just get rid of DJ Glaze because he's struggling a little bit in his second year. That's part of his development and Jackson Powers Johnson's development. And, you know, Will Putnam is a second year player. Like, there's a lot of young players that's why when Vince asked that question today, and I'm thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it throughout the show, that's why I went and counted how many first and second year players are playing. They literally are playing right now on both sides of the ball. I'm like, all of them deserve our focus right now, Vince.
Yeah, that's why it's tough.
The 10 players on offense, take out Jackson Powers Johnson, he's on the injured reserve right now, but 9 players going into Sunday's game are first or second year players offensively, and 9 on defense. All of those guys deserve the focus because that could be eventually part of the backbone of your team moving forward.
Snake Man, thanks so much for the phone call. But yeah, that's kind of why that popped up, is because, as you know, you think you're in evaluation mode. Okay, who are you looking at? Who's part of the solution? And there's a lot of options and a lot of decisions that have to be made, not just if they're going to be here, but, okay, where are you upgrading? So, like, for the example, you know, DJ Glaze is going to be here, but don't you want to kind of really hone in on what he's doing? To your point, if there's a right tackle out there on the free market and there's an upgrade, don't you think you need to make it? Mm-hmm. If you don't think he's playing at a top tier level, because moves have to be made
and
on that
offensive
line. And
he needs to be out there to kind of assess that,
right?
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like, moves have to be made on the offensive line. We discussed that. We talked about that. But I was a little surprised that it was kind of a unanimous Jack Besh.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be staring at Jack Besh. Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is fascinating. Because, I mean, I agree with it, but of all the young type of talent that could be out there.
They like what they see.
Why aren't we seeing more?
Let's go to the defensive tackles, Tonka Hemingway and J.J. Pegues, right? Who are you taking off the field? Jonah? He's a second-year player himself who's playing pretty well. And Adam Butler is
not
coming. And
I also like watching Jonah. Jonah Lauley plays
the game. Jonah's a good player. He's been
And Adam Butler might have had his best game of the season last week.
So it's easy to say, just play him. But it's like, are you taking those two guys off the field?
Yeah, the rotation has to be. Great conversation. Really appreciate the phone calls. But right now, you know, time is ticking. Literally and figuratively. Raider Nation Radio 920 is trying to put you inside Allegiant Stadium this Sunday, week 14 against the Broncos. Got a pair of tickets, a pair of field pregame passes to get you up close and personal, plus an autographed Max Crosby jersey, the newly minted Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee for the silver and black. You got to keep listening. Be caller number 9 when it is time to make that call. And we're going to get you hooked up with some Raiders swag. It is the ultimate Raiders hookup from your friends here at Raider Nation Radio 920.
Setting the odds and cashing tickets. It's Tim Murray from VSiN and from VSiN Las Vegas 1230 The Game here on the Morning Tailgate.
Welcome back inside the Morning Tailgate. Joining us now is VSiN's own college football tailgate show host on Saturday mornings, as well as host of VSiN Prime Time on the weeknights. He is friend of the program, the man who makes us our money, at one Tim Murray on the X. Tim, good morning. How are we?
I'm good, man. How you guys doing?
It's been a couple weeks because, you know, that old holiday got in the way of a week ago.
Silly Thanksgiving thing.
Did you have a nice Thanksgiving?
Yeah, it was good. Okay. Yeah. Went down to Florida to see the folks and got back here in time for the weekend. So, quick trip down to Florida and back into it, baby.
All right, I feel all caught up now. Should everybody else. Let's dive into the real meat and potatoes, the real Thanksgiving dinner. That is Saturday. Indiana, Ohio State. Raider Nation will be watching for a number of reasons, which includes the quarterback for the Hoosiers. Talk to me. How much are you, fellow those in the, I should say, in the betting world, salivating over this matchup?
You know, It's a complicated question because in the reality, how much does this game actually mean, right, for the college football playoff? The loser of this game is still going to get a bye. The winner is obviously going to be the number one seed. But, you know, that all being said, I am excited for this game. It's 1-2. It's I don't want to call it an underdog story, but it's certainly an incredible run that we've seen from Indiana, who is a loser for years and years and years. I mean, they haven't beaten Ohio State since 1988. They've lost 30 straight games to the Buckeyes, but Kirk Cignetti has changed everything up there, and they've brought in talent, lots of talent. Fernando Mendoza, you know, is a legitimate not only Heisman contender, he's the favorite to win the award, but he's also, as you pointed out, in the running to maybe be the number one overall pick. So, yeah, this game has got a lot of juice in it. The market has come down a little bit here on Ohio State. They open around 6.5-point favorites, now around a 4-point favorite. I'll be honest, I have not bet this game. I'm kind of conflicted because there's a thought process, guys, that is this a letdown spot a little bit for Ohio State? They were finally able to slay that dragon that was Michigan that they had not beaten since 2019. But Ohio State also hasn't won a conference championship since 2020. And it does also feel like this Ohio State team is ramping up. And you think back to last year, it felt like they perfected the system. Obviously, they didn't want to lose to Michigan in the regular season finale, but they ramped up in the postseason and they were unbelievable in that playoff run. And we had questions about the run game for Ohio State. And now Bo Jackson is been fantastic over the last 4 or 5 games. He's only had 151 carries on the year, so he's got plenty of tread on the tires. He's not, you know, Ashton Gentry from a year ago with Boise running for over 300 times during the regular season. So I keep going back and forth on this one. You know, push came to shove. I guess I would take the points with Indiana, but I think if you wanted to get a little funky in this game, maybe take Julian Sayin to win the Heisman Trophy. He's around 2-1. To win the Heisman Trophy, it's a 3-man race right now with Mendoza, Sayin, and Diego Pavia Vanderbilt because Jeremiah Love last week got nicked up in the Stanford game for Notre Dame. So I do think Julian Sain, if he has a big game on Saturday night, he certainly could catapult into the betting favorite to win the award. So, I'm kind of all over the place on this game. Excited to watch it, but right now don't really have a betting angle at this point.
I feel like the College Football Playoff Committee and their infinite wisdom protected Alabama a little bit this week by moving them to number 9 over Notre Dame. I think their thought process is if Alabama loses to Georgia in the SEC championship game, which they probably will, that gives them some cushion to drop them back down to 10 and keep them in the playoffs. So I got to ask you, A, do you think that that I'm correct in my assessment? And B, is Alabama, do you feel, guaranteed a spot in the College Football Playoffs, even if they lose as expected to Georgia?
I do. To answer your second question, I do think they are locked into a spot. Betting odds are what they are. It's not like these sports books have a mole inside the committee, and the committee doesn't really give us consistent answers. But I am feeling confident that Alabama will be in the playoff, win or lose, on Saturday. Now, from the Notre Dame standpoint or Miami standpoint, however you want to look at this, this is just solely my opinion. But this is how I think it plays out. I think if BYU beats Texas Tech, it's a simple answer. Notre Dame and Miami are out. There are no spots left at the table. If Alabama loses to Georgia, I think they drop Alabama back to 10. And like you said, I think it gives that protection of Notre Dame and Miami. If Alabama beats Georgia for a second time this year, Alabama probably jumps into the top 4, more than likely gets a bye. And then you're sitting there on Selection Sunday and Notre Dame and Miami are next to each other. And in my opinion, I think Miami jumps Notre Dame. Whether it's right or wrong, I know it's been nonstop about Miami deserves to be over Notre Dame. Look, you know, I've been pretty consistent on this. I'm a Notre Dame fan. I want Notre Dame to be in the playoff. I think they're a top 3 team in college football right now, but they lost 2 games. Exactly. And they lost one of them to Miami, and they have no one else to blame except themselves or the SEC refs that missed a holding on 4th and 11 against Texas A&M. But I also look at Miami, and I'm frustrated with Miami, to be honest, and the ACC, because if they just took care of business and didn't lose as a double-digit favorite to Louisville or didn't lose as a touchdown-plus favorite to SMU, they're in the ACC championship game, and this whole thing is moot.
Exactly.
Miami wins the ACC, Notre Dame gets the final at-large bid, and we've got a pretty darn good field, but unfortunately, Miami lost those 2 games, but they do have the head-to-head over Notre Dame, so you know, they have the trump card in a sense there. And then you look at the ACC, and we're looking at this conference. We're like, why do we want to see Virginia in the college football playoff? Why do I want to see Duke in the college football playoff?
Exactly.
Like, I don't want to see those teams in there. And the ACC needs to look long and hard at themselves in the mirror and say, we need to figure out this tiebreaker situation. They had a 5-way tie for second place with Louisville, SMU, Georgia Tech, Miami, and Duke, and the team who did not beat one team with an above 500 conference record, Duke, somehow gets in. They get the benefit of the doubt because they lost to Virginia in the regular season, who's a 7-1 conference team. Like, it makes no sense. The American, you know what they do for their tiebreaker? They say, screw it. We just take the highest-ranked team. If we have tied teams, we go to the highest-ranked team. If the ACC used the American tiebreaker, we would have Virginia and Miami playing on Saturday night, and this whole thing would be put to bed, and we wouldn't be spending countless columns and all this wasted airspace on Notre Dame versus Miami, because then Miami could just go beat Virginia, and this thing would be put to bed. But It is what it is, and we'll have a very controversial decision one way or the other more than likely on Sunday.
There's unbridled delirium in Southern Nevada for UNLV Rebel football. They head to Boise State Friday night. You can hear the game locally, ESPN Las Vegas. The send-out was Boise -3. It's now up to 4.5. How do you think this is going to play out for the second time around for these two teams?
You know, this game, from a point spread standpoint, is so intriguing to me. And here's why. In the middle of October, UNLV went to Boise, was a 13-point underdog, and lost 56-31.
Yeah.
Now they're a 4.5-point underdog, and I guess a lot of it has to do with Maddox Madsen, but he's going to play. Now, right. How healthy is he going to be? That's the question. Now, and also UNLV's played much better. Let's call it what it is. I mean, the defense was very impressive against Hawaii a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
I was surprised by, not that UNLV won, like I bet Hawaii, but I wasn't surprised that UNLV won, but I was surprised at how dominant they were against a rather prolific offense, at least in a prolific offense in the Mountain West.
Attack mode.
So, I mean, they held Hawaii to just 231 yards in that game. The same Hawaii defense, or offense, excuse me, that absolutely shredded San Diego State out on the island. So, the defense has gotten better, there's no doubt. And you guys know this better than I do. UNLV has a Boise problem. I mean, they've never won on the turf. I believe they've lost 10 straight in the series. Not to say that means anything for Saturday or Friday night. I think Colangelo's really, really good, playing probably his best football right now. I just can't get over the big move in the number, right? It was 13 in the middle of October. Boise won by 25 and dominated, and now the number's 4.5. So I think I'd have to lean towards Boise here in this spot. The market is betting them up. Maybe it's just numbers guys betting them in that particular situation. But I do think Boise wins, but... You know, it'd be a great story. And if UNLV wins, I know Dan Mullen was out there talking about if they win and Duke wins, hey, how about us to get into the college football playoff? That's not going to happen. But no.
Shucks.
I mean, if you want to play, here's what you do, okay? If you want to play the Boise State, or excuse me, UNLV is going to make the playoff, play Troy to UNLV to Duke on a money line parlay. And if you hit that lotto ticket, that's better than any number you would get in the futures market for UNLV to make the playoffs.
Thank you. That's nice.
There you go.
Troy. Got to write this down.
Okay. Troy, who is, by the way, a 23.5-point underdog. Troy would have to beat James Madison.
Perfect.
UNLV would obviously have to win their game.
Easy.
And Duke would have to beat Virginia.
Consider it done.
So put those three together. They're probably still not going to make the playoff, but at least you have a lot of money.
And then we'll take you to Hawaii, Tim, right, where you belong, where they love you.
Tim, last one before we let you go. Let's end on the Raiders here on Raider Nation Radio. In Week 10, when the Broncos and Raiders first met, it was a 10-7 barn burner on a Thursday night. That total number, if I'm looking at it correctly, is 40.5. I don't know if this is one that you're going to be chomping at the bit to go get a bet in, but just your take on it, and if you do have one NFL game that is tickling your fancy.
So, no, I have not bet this game. I did bet the Raiders a couple weeks ago when they were big dogs up in Denver. I took the points, and I thought that game was sensational because I was able to win a bet.
Well, there you go.
The Raiders plus the points. I'll say this. I have not bet this game, but if you are into teasers, this is a fantastic teaser leg, taking Denver down to 1.5 in a total that is that low. So those points are just a little bit more valuable. So I have not bet this one yet. I do like Dallas a little bit tonight, plus the points, to be honest. Market's coming in just a little bit on Dallas. I was hoping to get a 3.5 in this one. It's a high total. I mean, you look at the difference between Vegas and Denver versus tonight's game, it's two touchdowns. I mean, 40.5, 54, 54.5 in the market from a total standpoint. So I've been impressed by Dallas ever since they came to Vegas. I mean, that game seemed to kind of jumpstart them. They made the big trade, obviously, for Quinnen Williams. You know, they're a team that obviously is dealing with the unthinkable tragedy of losing a teammate in season. But they have played really, really good football here lately. I do recognize the trends for Dan Campbell off a loss are out of this world. He is fantastic off of a loss. I think I got to double check. I think he's unbeaten, but I'll double check that. But whatever it is, the history is on the side of that. But I've been impressed with what I've seen from Dallas. So I actually think Dallas plus 3 is going to be a bet for me later tonight.
Tim, it's awesome having you on. Thank you so much. What do you guys have in store for this week, especially as you got conference championships and then the upcoming bowl season?
Yeah, so we're just going to keep it rolling. We got another conference championship podcast coming out later today, me and Matt Eumanns. I'll be on every Saturday morning starting at 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. On the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show. So we're going to keep it status quo, keep it rolling along here as we get into the playoff. And Sunday could be a day where I'm, you know, crying a little bit if my Irish get left out. But
no.
That's the nature of the beast. So we will hope fight the good fight. Yeah.
So BYU needs to lose.
BYU needs to lose. That is the number
Alabama
one thing.
Alabama needs to lose.
Yes. If those two things happen, in my opinion, also Virginia winning, I think, would be helpful. There's a theory out there that the ACC doesn't want to get shut out, so a Virginia win would make it maybe be better too. Also, Vinny or Vince, you might want to earmuff this. Notre Dame also wants Boise State to win.
Whoa!
Yeah, for strength of schedule.
I did not earmuff it.
Yeah, yeah. Notre Dame fans definitely want the boys on the Smurf turf to get the win on Friday night to help to enhance the strength of schedule. We're in that time of year where a Yikes. Notre Dame Miami game is waiting on what a Mountain West championship result could be.
Yeah. Oh, crazy world,
wow.
man.
How unfortunate. Tim, thank you so much for your time. It's great hearing you. Thank you again. Let's do it again next week.
All right, see you guys.
Thank you. One Tim Murray on X. Follow it. Subscribe to the podcast. Mm. Puts cool. things in perspective.
Did you hear what he said? Dallas really got jump-started when they came to Vegas. I'm glad they could do something. I'm glad Vegas could do something for the boys. Because, you know, the boys need a little help, apparently.
Yeah, every advantage.
But he's 100% right. They have looked different.
They've taken off.
That trade helped.
The trades helped.
And because they're offensively, they've been playing well all year.
Yeah, but then the proof was in the pudding when they saw it in real time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, we can all put this together?
Yeah.
All at once?
Yeah.
Complimentary football.
Kind of a scary team, but I don't know if time is going to run out for them before they make the playoffs.
Well, goody for them.
They're looking great, though.
Yeah, they are.
And Detroit is in chaos.
Credit to Jerry Jones,
poor
man.
Poor Clay.
Yeah, Detroit's trying to figure out what their identity is on offense, and Dan Campbell's trying to control everything.
Tim went right against Detroit and Clay on a Thursday night?
This is a cold business.
Chicky and Pete's? Unbelievable.
This could be the Lions get right game, though, too, for sure.
Well, if you want to watch Clay cry tonight, watch over Chickies and Pete's at the all-new Sahara from 5 to 8 tonight for Thursday Night Football. Hey, this is our last run for Rebel tickets. Get your run of Rebel tickets. Be caller number 9, 702-365-9200 for UNLV against Air Force, January 3rd, 2026, Saturday afternoon. Get your tickets, 702-365-9200. Coming up next, the final sit-down. Let's go.
Hey, where are you going? We're not done yet.
What would you say you do here?
Well, look, I already told you. I have people skills. I am good at dealing with people. Can't you understand that? What the hell is wrong with you people?
Pull up a chair for the final sit-down on the Morning Tailgate.
I want to sit down.
It is the final sit-down here on the Morning Tailgate. Big thanks to our guests on today's program, the voice of the Raiders, Jason Horowitz. Tim Murray over there, VSiN. And you, Raider Nation, for a very, as always, spirited conversation and debate. Love it. Fun. That's what sports is.
It's fun. Smile.
Now, here on the final sit-down, we start with Goodfellas. Let me end with Goodfellas because I went down a rabbit hole last night of facts and different things. You know the You Think You're Funny scene?
Mm-hmm.
That was not in the script.
Right.
Oh, cool.
And that did not happen to Henry Hill. It happened to Joe Pesci when he was a kid. Because he said, hey, you're pretty funny to a wise guy when he was a younger kid in New York, and it didn't go well.
Wrong thing to say.
Oh, yeah, apparently didn't go well for him. And so he told that story when they were in the audition phase or whatever. And the only two people in that scene that knew about it when they first shot it, Ray Liotta and Joe Pesci. Everybody else's reaction had
cool.
no idea what to do.
That's awesome.
And the reason why they were silent is because they were kind of looking around like they didn't know this was part of the...
That's why you could hear a pin drop, and everyone had that look on their face. Oh, that's great.
And it might be the most, it is the most iconic part of that movie?
Sure, yeah.
I say so.
Among many iconic moments, but yes, I would agree.
Rich Eisen's next.